more is caught than taught. I've heard that before, but I didn't really understand what it meant until we began to catch my son lying about where he'd been. I guess he learned that from those little white lies that I used to tell his mother.
How can parents help their teenagers aim for individual responsibility in this life? This is a great question, and we're going to look at the answer here on Hope for the Heart. Thank you for joining us on this daily radio broadcast, sharing God's truth for today's problems. Our host is June Hunt. Today, June wraps up her series, Helping Teens Through Turbulent Times. Joined by her Hope in the Night co-host, Jim Kress, June focuses on what our teens learn by seeing rather than by what they're taught. Now, here's June Hunt on Hope for the Heart.
Unfortunately, it's catchable when a parent has a pattern of living in a way where the parent shaves the truth.
Yes.
The kid will shave the truth. And that can be very dangerous because then there's lifestyle and that looks like norm. That was that child's norm to be raised in a household there. So a key element there is be a person of integrity and accountability. I love the passage, Proverbs 10:9, a man of integrity walks securely, but he who takes crooked paths will be found out.
Well, June, most teenage boys will be getting introduced to the reality of having to get a razor and a can of shaving cream and do some shaving. And I think even the little kids, they like to mimic dad. Little boys do. They'll want to get a little fake razor or something. They even sell those in some toy stores. So if the dad's shaving, the son wants to shave. And I just thought of that metaphor that if a dad is shaving the truth off things, or a mom for that matter, again, the teenager is going to be right there pretty much in step thinking nothing wrong with this. And they'll do it sometimes not even realizing that they've picked up this bad trait.
Yes. I saw this with an older teenage boy and I talked with him about it. He had borrowed money, said money was coming in, and I was happy to loan him the money. That was not the issue. But then I saw him avoid me, basically not be accountable. And I didn't say anything for a while. When we sat down, though, and talked about it, all of a sudden it dawned on me, this is what his dad does. And I knew about his dad. It's so much easier for a teenager to be able to be ethical when both parents live a lifestyle without loopholes. And that's the way we should live, where we are honest and above board, and kids will take notice.
June, as we continue considering aiming for developing this individual responsibility in the lives of our teens, you talk about the importance of allowing our teens to take part in decisions about appropriate boundaries and consequences, i.e., if they break the rules, don't bail them out.
Right. Proverbs 29:17 says, "Discipline your son, and he will give you peace. He will bring delight to your soul." The reason why there is a negative consequence for us from God at times when we cross over the boundary line, it's so that we will associate more pain with what we're doing than pleasure. And the sooner a child, regardless of the age, learns that indeed there is more pain than pleasure, even though sin has pleasure for a season, the more mature that child's thinking will be in life. It's always going to be advantageous to have a boundary and to know when you cross it, there's a repercussion. If you stay within the boundary, there's a reward. And as a parent who is seeking to encourage your teenager, give increased freedom when there is respect for your authority, when they're staying within the boundaries. Find ways to continue to reward positive behavior. When the boundary is crossed, your teenager has chosen the repercussion. See, you're not wearing the black hat. That's what I love
right.
about this.
Yes, I like that.
You're no longer wearing the black hat. And most parents feel like, oh, I just hate to do this to my, or I just feel like I'm just a mean ogre. No, you've already explained what the boundary is. So let them know that there's going to be consistent boundaries. And not only consistent boundaries, you know, it'd be very difficult if you're playing tennis and the boundaries continually were changing. No, be consistent about the boundaries and then be consistent about the consequences. They need to be reasonable consequences. But basically, there must be a consequence that is earned, but it's the teenager who earns the consequence.
June, another point you have here in our material on targets for teens is to help your teens make practical and moral choices.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the teenager June who would say, what's so wrong with having sex outside of marriage?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an important question to be able to answer. Number one, you could ask that question. You know, if someone asked you, is there anything the matter with having sex outside of marriage, how would you answer it? And just listen to the response. But then you be ready. For example, you could say, there are practical, social, and spiritual problems that you need to consider. Practically, when males and females get sexually involved, a baby is sometimes produced. Now consider, if that were to happen to you as a teenager, are you ready to give up almost everything you're doing in order to support a child? If you should choose abortion to kill the unborn baby, do you want that on your conscience for the rest of your life? You see, you're bringing up things for them to consider, practical illustrations of what they could face.
June, one of the dilemmas of parenting teenagers is that big why question. Sometimes it seems easier when they're 4 and 5 and 6 to be able to say, well, just because. But boy, in the teenage years, to not give an explanation, that just is a different story.
Mm-hmm. Just to say, do it because I say so.
Just because I say so, yeah. Right.
This is why it's important to be very practical. There are some social reasons. Children who are born out of wedlock don't elevate society. It's much harder on society because it's much harder for these children to be well-parented, well-taken care of, well-educated. Children born in an intact two-parent home feel more secure, and every child wants a two-parent home. Now, for some teenagers, that would be an appealing rationale. For others, they would want to hear the spiritual aspect. For example, you could say, God designed the sexual act as holy for human beings. The word holy means set apart. The sexual relationship is to be set apart for marriage, where there is a covenant commitment by a husband and wife, and that covenant protects the relationship between husband and wife. 1 Thessalonians 4:7 says, God did not call us to be impure, but to live a holy life. Again, that's not a holier-than-thou mentality. It's holy as in we're set apart for God, set apart from sin.
June, how is a parent of a teenager to respond to their teen when he or she says, you know what, I'm big enough to make my own decisions now, and by the way, I don't want to go to church anymore?
Mm-hmm. It's important not to be dictatorial, self-righteous, legalistic, having that clenched fist, having a hardened approach toward a teenager. Start out saying, more and more, I'll be giving you greater and greater freedom to make your own choices. And one day, soon, you'll be out on your own, making all of your own choices. For a period of time, God has given me the privilege of having you under my care for protection and direction. Do you want me to do what is pleasing to God? And I've never heard a child or teenager say, no, I don't want you to be pleasing to God. They always say yes. With that answer, say, my highest priority is to please God, and especially where it concerns you. I love you. I want to please you. However, I know there are times when I can't do both. And in this case, about you feeling you don't need to go to church, it would be wrong for me, in my conscience and in the sight of God, if I do not have this to be a part of our spiritual experience together. In church, there are spiritual truths that are taught that can be building blocks for your future. You see, this is a biblical principle. Hebrews 10:25 says, let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing. And this is in the context of meeting together as Christians, and it deals with worship. Nowhere does it say in the Bible that you are to win all popularity contests with your sons and daughters. But for every parent, you need to be a parent. Stay in the role of being a parent. And that means you will give guidance, godly guidance, that in the end will produce a harvest of righteousness.
We'll return right after this with more from June Hunt. Life storms can destroy our lives in a way that makes recovery seem hopeless. June Hunt's book, Hope for Your Heart, provides hope for those trying to rebuild after losing their way in the storms. We would like to send you a copy of Hope for Your Heart as an expression of thanks for your gift of at least $25. And if you make that gift before the end of the month, we will also place a copy of this book into the hands of one of the many women in prison who are trying to rebuild their lives. Our order line is 1-800-488-HOPE, 1-800-488-HOPE, or you can visit us online at hopefortheheart.org.
I think it would be safe to say that all parents would want to trust their teenagers. But what would you do as a parent if you came into your son or daughter's room and found some clothing there with the price tag still attached, and you knew your son or daughter could not afford that, which pointed to the fact that they had shoplifted it from the store? A parent would be probably pretty disappointed if they experienced this in real life.
You know, the issue is not what is stolen.
Mm-hmm.
It's that the stealing goes on at all.
Right.
In fact, not long ago, I was talking with a mother who got into her car, and when she turned the key on, here was this loud rock music, and it certainly was not the station she had been listening to.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, this son did not have a driver's license, you understand.
Interesting.
The seat was way back, obviously to fit his body instead of hers. not real bright.
Talk about telltale signs.
And so, in essence, the son was stealing the car when the parents had gone to bed, and he would go off, apparently, with his friends and then come back and sneak back into the house. So stealing can take many forms mm-hmm. in teenagers' lives.
So, June, for both of these scenarios, a teenager stealing from a department store or trying to be on the sly and mm-hmm. stealing the car late at mm-hmm. night, what are some possible responses for a parent who wants to have healthy boundaries in these situations?
Well, let's go back to the reason for having boundaries in the first place.
Okay.
Boundaries are not there for parents to be able to lord over their children their position.
Mm-hmm.
Boundaries are not given to be mean, to be dictatorial, to be confining. Boundaries are good. A proper boundary given by a parent is to help a child or a teenager learn self-control. A boundary is a line that should not be crossed over. However, if that boundary is crossed, there should be negative repercussions or consequences for going over the line. And if the boundary is held or maintained, there should be positive consequences. And that positive repercussion would be increased freedom. Now, what you want to do is to communicate the boundary before there's a problem, not after there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking about an issue with a car, you might say, "Son, I know how excited you are about cars, and I know it's going to be fun for you whenever you're able to drive, getting your license, and having increased freedom. I do want you to know that the car is off limits until you have your license. Now, that's the law of the land. However, if you choose to go over the boundary I've just stated, there would have to be a negative repercussion. And if I find that you've taken the car out for whatever reason, then instead of allowing you to get your driver's license at the earliest time that you can, I'm not going to allow you to do that until 6 months later. Now, Jim, do you think that'd be a little bit of motivation for you to keep your hands off the keys?
I would think so, yes, because those teenagers, we've all been there. I mean, we lived for getting that driver's license.
That was a very important rite of passage. And that's why it's important to try to think ahead. Communicate with your teenagers how much you want to trust them and what privileges and freedoms they can earn by being trustworthy, and reward them for being trustworthy.
Well, June, let's go back also to what we talked about, the scenario where the teenager had obviously stolen items from a department store. What would you recommend for parents who have that situation before them?
Well, Jim, since actions are motivated by wants or needs, first ask the Lord for wisdom as to what is motivating your teenager to steal. And make sure those items were literally stolen instead of given as a gift. Don't just assume guilt, but ask about those items. If for any reason you have an uneasiness about the story given, then simply say, well, I'm assuming that this is the truth, so I'm sure you won't mind me talking with whoever the other person is who supposedly gave these items to them. You know, I would check it out. If you feel a real uneasiness about it, and your son or daughter shouldn't have any problem with you checking it out if it's valid.
Yeah, if they're bluffing, you're calling them.
Right, absolutely. So now, let's assume that the item was stolen. If you can make the consequence attached to the item that was stolen, in this case, restitution needs to take place. That means taking the items back if they are in a shape that they can be taken back. An apology needs to be written. A request for forgiveness needs to be verbally extended to whoever was the victim. Whether it's a department store or a person, I would suggest that you have the teenager rehearse before you the repentance and forgiveness speech, and then you go with your teenager to the offended parties and witness his verbal confession and plan for restitution. And then you would want to require that your teenager come up with specific ways to regain your trust so that you can restore privileges, and also a plan for a way to earn money to buy certain things in the future. By the way, Jim, I can remember a time when I stole a Three Musketeers bar. And it was because it was touted as the biggest candy bar. I was a little child, but there was definitely the thief in me where many times I did not get caught later on. And my mother saw this chocolate on my face. And I never will forget her walking with me back in the store where I had to confess, and Mother paid for the candy bar, but I was absolutely humiliated. And I obviously remember it to today. Mm-hmm. I think it's vitally important not to just cover it up. No matter how expensive, no matter how embarrassing, do not rescue your children from taking responsibility for asking for forgiveness and making restitution.
Well, June, obviously we're dealing with teenagers here. How can the parents listening not sound preachy or condescending as though they're up on their soapbox in doing this?
You know, the tone of a parent is all important. And that's why I think it's so good to begin by expressing care, by expressing the desire to always want to trust their teenager. You could begin this way. I'd use some affectionate term like honey or dear, whatever would be natural. Honey, I know you've been taught the golden rule and to respect others and their property. And I've certainly seen you do this in the past. And I also know that you expect others to value and respect your things and not to take them or use them without your permission. Therefore, it's only fair that you treat other people and their things the same way you want and expect them to treat you and your things. That means that if you ever steal anything, you take anything that's not yours, if you take anything from any member of your family, and by the way, at this point, if you want to mention the car, that certainly would be appropriate. If you should ever take the car without permission, not only will you need to apologize, ask forgiveness, but you will have to find a way to make restitution. Ephesians 4:28 says, "He who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work, doing something useful with his own hands, that he may have something to share with those in need."
Well, June, you've addressed the situation of the son or daughter who does not have a driver's license stealing the car at night. What about the teenager who does have a license but is doing the same thing, taking the car outside of the boundary of what the parent has set down?
Well, you communicate, again, how much you want to trust him, how much freedom you want him to earn. But because he's not been trustworthy, then you can't allow him for the next, whether it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever the time frame is that is appropriate, that will have the impact. The important thing is you're teaching a boundary. You're teaching them that they have caused the consequence of them not having car privileges. And I would make sure that the keys are not available for your teenager to easily take at night, and that you'll look forward to your teen earning the privilege to be able to drive again soon.
Hi, this is Paul for Hope for the Heart. Do you know the three primary problems that will surface if you're a peace-at-any-price parent? Teenagers really do want us to care enough to set boundaries for them. These three primary problems, plus more, can be found in June Hunt's book, Bonding with Your Teen Through Boundaries. You can order your personal copy of this book and the audio series about teenagers when you visit hopefortheheart.org, hopefortheheart.org, or you can call 1-800-488-HOPE. That's 1-800-488-4673. You may also want to order this book for a group study with other parents of teens. Some of our listeners have done this and have found it to be life-changing. And let me remind you that this month we have a special focus we call June in June. We're asking that you take a few minutes to share how God has changed your life through this ministry. Visit hopefortheheart.org and leave your note today, or send your note to Hope for the Heart, 2001 Plano Parkway, Suite 1000, Plano, Texas, 75075. We want to have the opportunity to thank God for the specific change in your life through the ministry of Hope for the Heart.
This month, Hope for the Heart has a special offer to help you and help others. For your gift of $25 to support our ministry, we'll send you a copy of June's book, Hope for Your Heart, as a way of saying thanks. And we will also place a copy of this book into the hands of one of the many women in prison who are trying to rebuild their lives. Call 1-800-488-HOPE or visit us online at hopefortheheart.org.
Hope for the Heart is committed to bringing biblical hope and practical help to individuals and families who listen to this station. You can learn more about this ministry and how you can partner with us through prayer and giving. Just visit hopefortheheart.org. That's hopefortheheart.org. Or call 1-800-488-HOPE, 1-800-488-4673. And thank you for your prayers and your encouragement through your notes, sharing how God has changed your life through this ministry. Let me share this message we received from a listener we'll call Randy.
Thank you for your wonderful, informational, inspiring, and blessed radio program. I listen to you every chance I get. You have opened my eyes and heart to the Lord so much.
Now, here's June once again with a closing word of hope from God's Word.
Being a teenager is tough, and let me assure you, it's not always easy for parents of teens either. But realize, whatever God has called you to do, He will equip you to do it. 1 Thessalonians 5:24 says, "Faithful is the one who calls you, and he will do it.